Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Morning, everyone, and welcome to Wagon Wheel, my podcast where I talk about whatever you ask me on cricket questions, really. I'm Jared Kimber. As always, we start with the people in Patreon. It is patreon.com/Jared Kimber. There's heaps of stuff there, including a Discord channel, which I haven't been to in a little while. I'm sure people have messaged me and I've forgotten to get back. But usually I'm there quite a bit, especially during test matches. So yes, please go over there. Big thanks to Cricket 8. So head over to cricket8.com as well. I don't think we've made the Cricket 8 ads at the moment. Muku is probably now running around in the background remembering he hasn't got them made. But thanks to them for bringing you this video. But if you want to ask questions, as I said, the best way of doing it is on patreon.com/Jared Kimber and then asking signing up there and then asking the questions that you want to ask. And the other way of doing it is if you are live in YouTube, you can send through a super chat. Lots of questions to go through today. I might be able to get through to a few more in the super chats as well. Well, I'll get to all the super chats, but normal comments. Aditya says, which of the two is harder to pick, England's greatest test batter or the greatest West Indian seamer? I think more people would probably... I suppose Malcolm Marshall is slightly above everyone else. Curtly Ambrose, Joel Garner is an interesting conversation to have for many reasons just behind. I don't think it's that hard to find England's greatest test batter. I think it's Jack Hobbs with Len Hutton just behind. Herbert Sutcliffe depending, let's see how Joe Root's career finishes as well. I think it's probably easier to find England's greatest test batter, but it's about the same. I'd say it's about the same on both. There is like a clump of three or four people at the top, but I think there's mostly a clear number one out there. Aditya says, it's clear that Tendulkar is India's greatest test batter, but who do you think has the best case to be number two? Gavaskar, Dravid, or Kohli? Gavaskar I have at the moment on my list. I've said this before. I think he might be the greatest player of spin of all time. Dravid might be second or third greatest player of spin of all time as well. So I do think it's Gavaskar. I think there are ways that you can poke holes through his record, as in, there are myths, like the West Indies thing. He doesn't dominate the great West Indies sides. But overall, his record is just so phenomenally strong that it's not something you see from openers, and it certainly holds up away from home. Dravid probably is somewhere around, Dravid's probably next, and then Kohli, I would have them pretty much in that order. Coley can still finish, but that big dip where Coley wasn't making any runs, even if you look at the match ratio he was in that time, still, he wasn't an above average player, even for the era ratio where everyone was scoring less runs. He wasn't a massively above average player in that period. That's eaten out. That's like 4 or 5 years of what should have been his around his prime batting, or at least at the end of his prime batting, that he didn't get. And so that has actually affected him in the overall rankings quite a bit. If you look at that sort of stuff, if you're looking at peak, I think you make a claim that Cole is number two on peaks, although I suppose Vrinda Sehwag also on a peak basis, or even BVS Laxman on a peak basis would also raise their hands there. Addy says, IPL teams with good overseas players should try not to field 4 overseas players in their batting first lineup, even bowling in some cases. Basically what AHA has done. Why name the finisher Robin Powell in your lineup without knowing if you will need him? And so they could bring in Berger in the second innings. I think I know what you're saying. I think you're talking about the subs here. I can understand that. I think I can understand that theory. I'd need to look into more of the full super sub. I keep calling it super sub. The full impact regulations to have a look at that. Can you not sub out an overseas player just for another overseas player as well, which is another way of doing it? I don't know. Based on my very limited knowledge of the impact sub rule, then some of what you're saying there makes a lot of sense. Will says, if we go from an English summer of mid-April to early September, how many days play you think would be ideal for a player, for player safety, match quality? 27 first-class games or three-day games like the old days. You can't do 90 days of cricket? What's wrong with you? I think one of the big advantages of English summer is always the extra games that people play. It's why players quite often, especially overseas players, suddenly expand their games quite dramatically, because you're not in the nets all the time. You've got to solve real match situations, and suddenly they're getting reps that they've never got before. I think overall, and it depends on your role, like a batter maybe would be 140 days of cricket a year, and a seam bowler might be, 110 days of cricket a year. So if you split that by half, you're probably coming up with something that's a little bit more realistic for everyone. But it depends on different players. Obviously, Courtney Walsh, you would say he should play every single day of a summer. And if you're Mark Wood, you should say he should play 25 days of the summer. So there's no real, limit on that. So the way that you're putting it doesn't quite help, because every different player plays a different role, but also every different player has a different kind of body. So I don't think there is an ideal 70 days seems quite fair over that. Will says, where would the Barmy Army rank in cricket's greatest sledgers? I don't know. Not on the list, because they don't play cricket. I mean, sledging is something that is done on the field. The stuff off the field, what's his name? Yabba, the Australian guy, and Australian fans and South African fans and all that sort of stuff. It's not New Zealand fans do it as well. It's not really sledging, is it? It's because you can't get bounced. It's either just abuse or it's friendly banter or whatever you want to call it, but it's not sledging. Sledging has, that sort of sledging and trash talking. There is a weight on that, because you've got skin in the game, because you can be embarrassed. The Barmy Army singing a song, they're not about to get bounced, or they're not about to drop a catch, or they're not about to fail. They've got no skin in the game, right? So I think it's very, very different. Cam says, just saw the women's Ashes in Australia is being brought forward by year to the coming summer, but there doesn't appear to be comms on why. Is it just to clear air from the men's Ashes? Will the washes in England be brought forward a year as well? I haven't actually seen that. So Cam, you beat me to it. It's an interesting one. I think with women's cricket, I've heard quite a lot about the idea of playing these series all together so that you get more media coverage, but you don't. You actually get less media coverage, and generally men's cricket writers don't cover women's matches. And the same is true of women's cricket writers. They don't cover men's cricket matches. It's becoming more and more separate. So I think it would make more sense to distance them. But I could see why in somewhere like England, I could actually see how that sort of you know, we've got two Ashes sort of, you know, works in the way that, you know, fans find it very easy to travel around England and go to games and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Whereas in Australia, you kind of just go to the game if it's in your home city, unless, you know, you're having a proper holiday somewhere else. So in Australia, it might make more sense to separate them. And in England, it might make more sense to put them together. But I don't know why this has particularly happened. No one knows, says, hey, Jared, you talk about the Evan Goldbus effect for batters, where the top order feels more comfortable when there's a number eight who can bat. Does that have the opposite effect on bowlers? Do the main bowlers feel more pressure when they feel that the fourth, fifth, and sixth bowlers aren't very strong? Yes, but it plays out differently because there's not much a bowler can do other than bowl their 24 balls, right? And they're going to bowl them more or less very, very similar. You might get the odd occasion when you have a strike bowler who thinks to themselves, well, I'm going to have to strike more often here because we don't have anyone else who's a strike bowler. But I can't do that because our fourth and fifth bowlers are not particularly strong. So I might go a little bit more defensive. But there aren't actually that many strike bowlers in T20 cricket, right? That's not. So whereas there are four or five people in your batting lineup whose job is to try and push the game as far as possible. So it's a very different kind of thing. You see it a lot in test cricket. That kind of effect of, you could see a bowling attack where there'll be, I've seen Jimmy Anderson do this so many times when he looks around and he thinks fourth and fifth best bowlers are not particularly strong. I mean, I have to keep the pressure on for as long as possible here. In T20 cricket, it's probably slightly different, but you might get with your strike bowlers. My guess is it would be able to go in two different directions. The one direction with a strike bowler would be that they know that they either have to take the wickets, and so they push even harder for wickets, or the opposite, and they really bowl quite defensively so that it doesn't cause an issue. If you, for your more standard defensive specialist bowlers, you probably, that's just a little bit of added pressure on them, but I don't think it changes them. Where it really changes them is their roles might change. So they might have to do things that they don't normally do just because the other bowlers have to be given the easier overs. So there are things like that, but it's not the same kind of effect of having a lot of batters look up and see a batting order and then bat slower. It's a lot more complicated for bowling, I think. Ellie says, considering how much we talk about different types of balls and how they react differently, why isn't there any analysis on different types of bats and how each manufacturer impacts batting performances? Because there's so many bats and no one uses the same bats. I think that within the bat-making community, there's a lot of talk, but it's not the same as having like three bowling companies, right? Or three ball-making companies that basically do everything in international cricket and professional cricket. So I do think it's quite different from that point of view, would be one. The only research I've ever seen on this sort of stuff basically said that most bats do exactly the same thing. You know, it's down to the quality of the wood. Generally, the top pros get the best quality of wood. Then it's down to the shaping for the individual player, you know, whether you want the middle, lower or higher, all those sorts of things. But when MCC did research into this, the best bat they found as far as expanding the middle was the Gray Nickel Scoop. So I can tell you that if you are a player who wants to hit as many balls as possible, through the field or over the field, the Gray Nickel Scoop is the best bat. And when I always had this theory when I was younger that was a different kind of bat. On all the players who seemed to use it, club cricket, even professional players, it felt like they were just always timing the ball better than everyone else. Now, does that mean, from what I could tell, it doesn't affect how far you hit it, but what it means is it's the best way of getting the middle wider. So I've still never bought a scoop, but I'm still waiting for Gray Nickels to give me one for free. No, I mean, it's just that, you know, I usually buy from small bat manufacturers. But one day I would like a scoop just to see how it feels differently. But I do think that it's, from the science that I've seen, and it was only one survey, it was probably the best bat from that point of view. All the other bats do more or less the same thing. It's just that individual bat makers or individual players like slightly different things on their bats, would be my guess. Let's just have a quick break here on Wagon Wheel. Oh, we've got a lot of questions today. I'll get through them all as quickly as I can. And I'll be back in one moment.
I'm Cyndi Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Lubick says, Compton, Botham and Perry played soccer. Keith Miller and many others played footy, Aussie rules football. What are some of the other examples of cricketers playing other sports professionally or to a very high level? Susie Bates would be the obvious one. Do you count Ash Barty on that list? Does she do it? WG Grace played, did he play football? I know he's a hurdler. Did he play decent level of football as well? Trying to think of some others that have played. There's obviously some indoor cricket people that have gone on to do that. Max Walker, Jamie Siddons, Simon O'Donnell, Shane Warne all played Aussie rules football. I can't think of any rugby guys off the top of my head. George Munsey got to the professional level of golf and then came back to cricket. Alex Keith played cricket professionally, then went back to Aussie rules professionally. There must be a bunch in New Zealand. There's a male New Zealand player who I think has represented the men's and men's and women, I always said, the cricket and soccer team. Is it Mark Burgess? Cricket. Is that his name? Former cricket player, Mark Burgess. Oh, there's a Namibian, isn't there, who has played in two World Cups, in a Rugby World Cup and a Cricket World Cup, off the top of my head. Football. Here we go. Mark Burgess. He won the inaugural New Zealand Footballer of the Year Award in 1965, and he regularly played for the under-23 side and scored. Did he play for the national team? He played one game for the national team. So there you go. So there's another one. I'm probably missing a few others. I said Susie Bates, didn't I? So she's been at the Olympics for basketball. I think there's obviously a lot of professional women cricketers who played Aussie rules football. And I've forgotten her name, but she's got red hair and she was a great player around 2012. It is off the top of my head. There would be a lot of other women, I would say, that would have done that because that is probably more common in modern days. And then if you're going back, I'm trying to think of some of the other players that would have played dual sports. There must be more New Zealanders and I can't think of them. I'm trying to think if there's any other South Africans because that's another country it might have happened in. But yeah, those are the ones off the top of my head anyway. But there is actually quite a few. I think we're doing a Crick Picks on it shortly, Ubik. So the ones that I don't know about, I'm sure will come up. I feel like there's someone in hockey, and I don't know if it's a Pakistani or an Indian player, but I do feel like there's someone in hockey. there's obviously just a ton of players like, you know, Ricky Ponting and AB de Villiers and Brad Hodge and, you know, the War Brothers, who could have been dual sport athletes, but they just were sort of coming into a period where, you know, their second sport, it wasn't going to work. So they kind of had to disappear. And, you know, they went that way. Rahul says, seems like Warne only bowled the flipper in the early part of his career. Was this due to injury? And was his slider a result of this? Kind of a less dramatic flipper with less revs. Do you know of any other leggies playing today who bowl the flipper? Okay, so the flipper is, and this was my big argument. So between what, 2008 and 2014, when all these off spinners were bowling the deuce wrap, and people would be like, oh, it's so exciting for the game. It's great that all these different people are doing it. And I'm like, yeah, but only like a handful of bowlers have ever bowled the flipper. And most of them didn't bowl it all the way through their career. Some of these balls are supposed to be hard or almost impossible. This idea that you should let anyone, you know, come in and bowl a ball because it's illegal, because it makes cricket exciting, just doesn't make any sense to me. I think he had a few problems. The flipper is not a particularly good ball to top order players. Now, that's going to sound stupid because he took quite a few wickets, and obviously, you know, Richie Richardson and Darrell Cullen, but most top order players, have I got my ball on my desk? I do. This isn't going to work brilliantly for the people listening, but essentially to bowl a flipper, it is like you are clicking your fingers with the ball in your hand. Whereas with normal wrist spinner, you're rolling your hand over. So it's a bit like this does my head in for commentary all the time. They go, oh, I didn't pick the slower ball. Sometimes they don't pick the slower ball, and you can tell by the way their hands go out ahead of themselves. Most times, professional batters pick the slower ball, unless it's a knuckleball, occasionally they will just miss their standard slower ball just because you don't pick up every single delivery. But the reason they pick the slower balls is because there is a big difference between running your fingers behind the ball and running your fingers on either side, or the ball coming out the back of your hand, right? There's a big difference on all that. It's a bit different with a knuckleball because it might look more or less as it's coming towards you like a normal delivery. So if you go back to the flipper, most batters are able to tell the difference between a ball being clicked out of the fingers on the side and a ball being rotated like a normal leg spinner. Like there's a big physical difference that you can note there. So I think that was a part of it. His fingers obviously were also a part of it. It is, I've tried for years to bowl the flipper. I reckon I bowled two over a full length of a pitch. One of which, a guy got an inside edge onto his pad. That was like the biggest success. Over about 18 yards, I can bowl the flipper. And over 16 yards, it would be a decent option for me. But over the full length of the pitch, it is almost impossible to bowl. A slider is, I think, a much better ball. Now, the difference is it doesn't skid as fast and it doesn't have that sort of rocket-like action. But I don't know where Warne got his slider from, but Shahid Afridi never really bowled flippers all that much. I think Anil Kumble, Abdul Qadir, they could bowl them, but it wasn't really one of their stock balls. Imran Tahir had one for a little while, I think, as well, but didn't, wasn't something he bowled all that often. But the slider, Shahid Afridi, when no slider is coming down, your hand is still looking like it's going for a leg spinner. It just doesn't go as far. So instead of the ball coming out the back of the hand, it really does come more out the front of the hand. But to the naked eye, the ball is still rotating, and it usually drifts in, which if you've ever watched Virat Kohli or Chris Harris, even little bits of revolutions can still make the ball drift in. Anil Kumble is another really good example of that. So the slider to a top order batter looks like it could spin. A flipper doesn't. The difference is the explosiveness. But I think once his fingers started causing him an issue, I just don't think he had the ability to snap out the slider the way that he always did. It's not as accurate either. It requires a different kind of setup because you need the batter to start thinking, oh, I need to go on the back foot here. So, the famous story of Warne is he was a good young cricketer. He went to play cricket in England for a year, came back, and his wicketkeeper was up at the stumps to him, and he bowled a half tracker. And the wicketkeeper thought, you know, if he's smart now, his next ball will be a flipper. And it was. And that was the point at which they realized that Warne not only knew had the physical gifts, but had the mental game to understand what he had to do. And you see that with Cullinan, right? Bowling purposely short, Cullinan smashing them, getting all puffed up again. And then Warne going, okay, here's the flipper. The slider actually lands quite full. right? You want it to be full. You want it to skid through. So it's a very different kind of delivery. And most leg spinners can bowl the slider. They don't all bowl it with the skill of Shane Warne. And obviously, the more you spin your leg spinner, the better the slider can be. The only other thing that is different, I think, also is at the start of his career, the slider, and this would have been the same for Afridi, wouldn't got many LBWs because umpires wouldn't give an LBW when you're on the front foot. Most of the flippers, as I said, were set up to be short balls, and then that ball would skid on. So I think there was a natural evolution that happened there. So finger injury, deception of top order batters, the length that was bowling, how you got LBWs, all these things changed. I don't know if we'll ever see another bowler with a flipper like that again. It is phenomenally hard to bowl. I think the Dusra is probably harder to bowl legally, but I think if you could bowl the Dusra, you could land a Dusra far easier than you could a flipper. Ubek says, do you think Chris Gayle is underappreciated as a test player? Yes. Everyone remembers his white ball exploits, but his test record is solid and he's one of the only four men to hit two 300s. Yep, more 300s than Sachin Tendulkar, right? No, I do think it is. And I tell you what, when we've been doing our top test batters of all time, it's not like he's going to be in the top 50 or anything, but he's at numbers that it's really clear to us that he's massively underappreciated. But to be fair, I wrote this years ago about his test playing. I think it was one of the first magazine articles I ever wrote on cricket. Back to the old Wisden Cricketer magazine when that existed. So yeah, I'm completely on board here. I think he's a fantastic player and his record really holds up in the places where it's hardest to open as well. But his average is probably just one or two clicks too low, right? If he just got it a little bit higher, he'd be in that area where they would talk about. And then he got so good at something else. And sometimes that happens, right? You know, we see that all the time. Samir says, should the ECB initiate a policy if a central contractor player of another country is signed by a county, an English player is then able to play in the equivalent domestic competition of where the signed player is from, mainly about Australia players like Lyon, Labuschagne. Is it beneficial for the Australian test side? Yeah, but how is that going to work? Because I don't know how that would work, Samir. The reason the counties are paying for them is because they're paying for themselves to get people in. Sheffield Shield isn't set up for audiences, which is part of the reason they don't have people turn, you know, they don't sign overseas players all that often. And how could you force a Sheffield Shield side to pick a player based on what is a private interaction between a professional club and a professional player? Like, it's a great idea, but how would you ever do it in reality? I think this is something that teams, you know, that I think the two big things that, and I've talked about this a lot, is having a proper A league where everyone goes around the world playing each other and upskilling their players outside of first-class cricket, I think is a must. And the second thing I think is more interesting is the ability to get players overseas in different leagues that can benefit your team. So not just getting the money, which is great, but also setting them up at a particular club or league that you want them to be in, which will help develop them or whatever that may be. And a person whose job it is to do that at franchise level or first class level would be really important. But what you're talking about here is how would the ECB do this? So let's say Nathan Lyon signs for Manchester, right? Why would New South Wales, who have nothing to do with this deal at all, be forced into a situation where they have to take, Tom Hartley, huh? They've got nothing to do with Nathan Lyon in his off-season signing a contract with someone else. They don't care. So, no. There's no way you could do that. But the bigger conversation, I think, is there to be had. I'll get Swami Nathan's comment in a moment. But just first, we'll run another ad. You're listening to The Wagon Wheel. I am Jared Kimber, and we'll be back in a moment.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
All right, welcome back. Swami Nathan says, what's with the pitches in Dubai that made Harshal Patel successful? And by extension, what is it about India that makes him suck? Oh, no, I don't think it was anything to do specifically with the pitches. I think we've seen him bowl well in other places. He needs to... He's at his absolute best when he's putting maximum revolutions on the ball. And if you go back to when he was successful at the time, you'll see, you know, my writing and my videos, I was talking about the fact that bowlers who need those revolutions generally can't do it for a long period of time. So Dwayne Bravo's record's quite up and down at times. And that's because when he was able to put maximum revolutions on the ball, it didn't matter if you picked his slow ball or not. You still have to play it, right? And Harshal Patel is very similar. You're talking about bowlers who, when the ball comes out of the hand, it's sort of coming at your face. You think it's going to be a full toss and then it dips. Harshal Patel also got side spin on his. He's going to be able to get that in Indian wickets as much as he is in Dubai. So I just think it's more to do with that. Also, teams understood him a little bit more. You know, when he first came in, he'd played a little bit. He'd been in and out, but people hadn't really planned for him. He had one big season and everyone talked about him. But, you know, we always said that I think his basic skill is really, really high, but he was always a high ceiling, low floor player, right? He's not quite a frontline bowler. He's a bowler with really, really good skills, but he probably needs to back that up with slightly better batting. And we haven't really seen that from him so far. So I do think there's a few more issues there, but I don't think the Dubai one is something I'd massively be worried about. Simon Nathan again says, When the IPL becomes 6 months in a year, will the centre players move with their families? How do you see that working? I ask because a lot of English soccer players seem miserable in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, if it's 6 months a year, I would assume by that point that would happen. I think it would be very, very different than what you've talked about with English soccer players. English soccer players have always lived at home and then suddenly they arrive in Saudi Arabia and it's completely different and they're miserable. Anyone by the time it's 6 months a year, everyone's already played in India. They've, you know, played in Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, maybe Pakistan as well, right? They're used to the subcontinent. They may not all like it, but they're used to it. They understand how it works, and you know, it's fine. It's very different than being dropped in a culture that you don't really understand. You know, those English football players, like outside of hanging out in Dubai a little bit, probably haven't, you know. I don't know if the wine bar with the $1,000 cocktail in Dubai is very similar to Saudi Arabia, right? So I think that is very, very different. And cricketers are much more used to traveling around countries outside of Europe specifically, just because that is what cricket is. So I think there's a couple of big differences there. But yeah, no, there's no doubt that it will affect some players, and you might see some players not want to do it or look at it differently. It'd be very hard to not have your family for 6 months, I would have thought. It's not an ideal situation. Somebody Nathan says, would you please consider putting timestamps on your Overthrows Uncovered podcast? There are bits that are worth revisiting and timestamps will make it easier. It's just a financial and time thing. We're just not there at the moment. We, you know, most of the people who work for us are just working part-time and it's a step too far. We tried to do it through Minvo. And I don't think it's quite worked, but it might be something that we can do in the future. But it's been a plan since day one. It's just, I have to hire someone to go back through everything and work that out. And they have to have an understanding of what the content is and everything else. It's just not how it works in our company at the moment. GD says, so Boston Celtics beat Denver Nuggets to win their 18th playoff. If you can't tell, I'm a Celtics fan. Yeah, I mean, I think Nuggets would be pretty happy to play the Celtics in the finals at this point. Although, to be fair, the way the Nuggets are playing, I'm not sure there's a team they would be massively worried about. But from what I've seen, those are the two best teams. But I worry about the Celtics in a playoff. I don't like how their offense works in physical late game moments. And that's why I was so confident about Denver eventually making it and winning a play, the finals, was because that's kind of what their entire game is built around. But Yeah, those certainly will be the two teams. I'm not certainly. Those certainly are the most logical teams to make the finals. Christopher says, does another IPL mega auction undermine the competition? Just 3 years, it doesn't seem very long, or have I missed the introduction of more sides? So there was a follow-on question from a fan in here. He said he likes that because in European football, things don't become very competitive because, you know, players sign up all the best players, teams sign up all the best players, and then the smaller teams can never get a chance to go through. It's a very different situation, of course, because of the salary cap and everything else in the IPL, although salary cap is certainly not enforced, but it's at least there. I think the problem with the mega auction after 3 years is, like, at a certain point, they need to do... If you're going to keep bringing teams in, what you need to do is a franchise auction, which is, or whatever, I can't remember what the name of it is, but where you can select six players that you don't want to let go, and the franchises, you know, get the ability to go after all the free agent players first, and then all the other players, and then they bid off between themselves, and then there's a normal auction. What I just don't see the point in having so much. Like, do you remember that Delhi team? I thought the Delhi team that before the last mega auction that was building was really, really exciting. And you looked at it and, you know, it's like, well, they can't keep this. What? That doesn't make any sense. So I think we've seen enough of mega auctions. I'm hoping this is the last one. There are other ways of making the league level. And if the mega auction was really working, then Kolkata, Chennai and Mumbai wouldn't have won the vast majority of the titles. So it's not as if it's making the league more level, right? What, Sunrisers, Deccan, Rajasthan, Gujarat, are they the only other winners off the top of my head? I'd have to go back and check. It's not a level league anyway. So the mega auction isn't even doing the thing that people want it to do. So I'd be looking at I just don't see the point of it anymore. I think the league's mature enough, you don't need it. Bloody Bugger says, what was the first time the ball tampering was caught on TV? Was it Athens? Mike Atherton? I would say that's the first one with the... because I think the New Zealand-Pakistan one, I don't know if it was caught, but the Atherton one was the first really clear one that I'm aware of anyway. Vickers says, what do you make of Du Plessis' captaincy? I often see the people criticising for not trusting the spinner. How much captain watch cricket? I'm not sure what you mean by that. Because the more they watch, the better they will be, I think. Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. So Kyron Pollard, when I worked at St. Lucia, would schedule his dinners around when CPL games were on so he could watch every single game live. I know other captains who don't watch cricket at all, right? And everyone picks up and learns things in a different way. I would say one of cricket's big problem is that lack of kind of film. So I think at the end of each game, one person from the on-field leadership group, one of the main assistants and an analyst should go back and watch every single ball. And cricket still doesn't seem to do just basic things like that. The players are watching a lot more footage. So there are certainly captains who are just on their phone the whole time watching footage, but it's different. As far as fast captaincy, I haven't had a big issue. He doesn't trust the spinner. I mean, I'm not sure I trust their spinner all that much. So I don't know if I could have a go at him for that. But yeah, he does seem very much fast bowler oriented. And to be fair, he's from South Africa, but also they don't have, like, you know, fast bowling has been their successful point. You know, if you looked at the IPL team maps we did. Addy, these questions are too long. There's no way I can read all this, right? Hardik's T20 stats against Rashid are pretty bad. Okay. My argument is MI didn't miss the fact that Rashid had an over, but they thought David was the very best of the two bad options. So you've got here that that Rashid averages 20. Hardik averages 14 against Rashid Khan, right? Tim David, doesn't he average 7 against all leg spin of recent times, or maybe it's just for leg spin in the IPL? So that is a worse option. So it wasn't the best. So sending Tim David in to face Rashid Khan for an over when Hardik Pandya has a poor but fine, you know, like an okay record. He's hitting for a couple of sixes. Compared to Tim David, would seem to be a huge mistake. It might explain why Hardik moved himself down the order and everything else. You say here on a similar vein, do you have any stories about Badders captains refusing to face a very bad matchup? No, generally not. Players try and go out there. I know Darren Samage didn't want to face spin and you know, tried to push himself down the order as much as possible against teams with spin. But that's knowing what you're good at, right? Like I don't see that as refusing. We see players like AB de Villiers and Andre Russell and Henrik Claassen push themselves down to where they feel like they're best suited to a game. But in individual games, that might not always be the best option. So there's plenty to be said about stuff like that. I just think, even based on your numbers, I think Hardik is a better bet against Rashid Khan. They wasted an over in that chase by doing that. Bloody says, one of my favorite movie scenes is in Moneyball, showing the Oakland A's 20-game winning streak with the corresponding historical teams who also have long streaks. How much media coverage was given to the 1999-2001 16 games in a row by the Australian team? Was it a big deal when they beat the West Indies record of 11 wins in a row? There was quite a bit, but cricket and baseball are very different sports. So, you know, you get teams in baseball and in basketball and American sports, hockey, go on runs like this all the time. Whereas in cricket, it's really rare. Like, they were breaking a record of 11 wins, right? And so that's not a very high number. And it's also, in baseball, when Oakland A's got on a roll and they started winning all those games, there was a game every couple of days, so the hype just kept building. Whereas when Australia was winning those test matches, there was months off in between. So it's not comparable. There was a little bit of hype. The real big hype around Australia was the Australia going to the West Indies, because that's a series that's in a terrible time zone for Australian fans. I think it starts at 11 p.m. and finishes at 6 a.m. or something around that, from my childhood of watching them. So that's a terrible series from that point of view, from a timing point of view. And that was still massive, like, just I outside of an Ashes, and I would say at that point that was way bigger than Ashes, but outside of maybe something like 2005 Ashes, I can't remember ever being in Australia when there was sort of more hype for something than Australia beating the West Indies. So that's probably more that probably had a lot more hype than the win record did. Ian says, what would be better for Tom Hartley's development in 2024? Staying at Lanx, working with Nathan Lyon, but playing less, or going somewhere else and playing more? My issue with him playing behind Nathan Lyon is, aren't the Old Trafford curators already going to be trying to make this wicket spin? Because if they've hired Nathan Lyon and then they've got Tom Hartley, it makes sense to them. What you really want from Tom Hartley at the moment is for him to get practice on flatter wickets that don't help spin, because that's where we have to see if he has the game, and also to be the frontline spinner, because that's the bit that they need to train him in. We know he can be the secondary spinner when it turns, right? So, yeah, I think based on that, Ian, I'm not sure it's the ideal situation for him.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Samir says, well, Sean Marsh, highly underrated T20 player. His stats look good to me. He was an anchor. So, you know, we do what we do with anchors. He had a great a great IPL year. Was it a first IPL year or second? It was right up there anyway. where he was fantastic. But his strike rate's under 130. So he averages 38, which is above average. But my memory of like average openers around that period was a strike rate of, I think an average of 29 with a strike rate of 128 was seen as par. So he's 7 runs up on average and slightly down on strike rate. He played for the Scorchers and they wanted him to bat through the inning. So there is an element of that, not particularly his fault. But he was an anchor and, he didn't really kick on as much as maybe other anchors did. I always thought he was a brilliant power play player, which is interesting because he was in Test cricket, he was better against spin, but I always thought he was a really good power play player. He played really straight, hit the ball quite hard, could put pressure back on you. But he didn't really go anywhere in the middle overs, is my memory of him anyway. He's probably deserves to be remembered more, but I also don't think he was like a fantastic transformative T20 player. Aditya says, oh, I've done that one. Aditya says nothing. Rudra says, how do you evaluate Tendulkar and Dravid as T20 players? I don't think they are well remembered for the T20 exports, but I feel like I remember them having some high scoring seasons, or Tendulkar in particular could score pretty quickly. I think we might have covered this on our MVP seasons. I think there was one Tendulkar season that stood out. Dravid just didn't really understand what he needed to do in T20 cricket. And when he tried to hit, he basically would turn into a slogger at times. And so he stayed in, but couldn't get the ball off the square. I mean, his strike rate was 113. There's no time in T20 history when that's an acceptable strike rate. Sachin, as I said, I've got a feeling he had one really good year. By our advanced metrics, if I'm right, T20 overall. So his average was above par, but his strike rate was still a little bit slow. So in 96 games, he averaged 33 with a strike rate of 121. I mean, big scoring seasons. Both of them averaged 27 and 32. So big scoring seasons, yes, but at what strike rate? And, T20 cricket has changed. Even Tendulkar's strike rate, that's mediocre. So I suppose I'd have to go back and look at his years and everything else. I would say he would be around slightly above average on for his runs and maybe slightly below average. So around a good slight plus opener. And Dravid probably would be my guess. I can't imagine he's not with that strike rate. Arudra says, what holds Bangladesh back from being better at test match batting in their own country? I understand the pitches make it difficult to hit in T20s, but shouldn't they be more consistent, at least in Bangladesh themselves? Or are they just not an old enough team? I just don't think... Yeah, I don't know, because they've kind of had enough batting in ODI cricket to suggest that they should be better. I'm not sure I have a great answer to this. This might be one for Muhammad Islam. I think it's a really good question. I would say that they have not really made test runs anywhere. And so then I think you would say that in the slightly less pressured region of ODI cricket, their players who are a little bit more limited have the ability to still knock the ball around and score. Whereas in test cricket, that's not as much of how it goes. So let's just have a look. So last 10 years... Bangladesh batters in test cricket, this is everywhere, average 27. So who averages less than them? Afghanistan, Ireland, Zimbabwe. Yeah. So the only country that's close to them is South Africa, which has gone through a huge batting drought and also has to play on far tougher wickets. So there's that. And if we filter in home, let's see if that changes anything. I suppose what I'm saying is I think the overall batting talent is just slightly lower on talent. So at home, that average goes up to 30. Maybe the best way of looking at this is away also. Just to see if there's anything else in here. This last 10 years. So Bangladesh away from home, average 24.66. I think that tells you a very much where their batting quality is. So the only teams worse away from home are Ireland, Afghanistan, fine, they haven't played many games. South Africa, who have been going through that run drought, I just said, and the West Indies. right? So even Zimbabwe away from home have a higher batting average. And so that would suggest to me that it's a talent thing and that they don't have as many talented test batters coming through. That's a bit of a pop psychology way of looking at it, but I think that's right. Yeah. Ben says 30% of recreational cricketers in the UK are of South Asian heritage. Only 5% of professional cricketers are from that same group. Why do you think this is? How do we solve it? And is it making the England cricket team weaker than it could otherwise be? Yeah, certainly made, you know, if you're not picking from a huge talent pool, that's a big issue. I think English cricket clubs and the system of playing cricket in England comes from private schools and it comes from sort of elite clubs. So, you know, some, you know, in London, clubs like, you know, North Middlesex and, you know, a club like Beckenham in South London and those sorts of big clubs. And if you go to those clubs, they are, you know, you have to buy a membership and quite often it's quite expensive and all those sorts of things, I think, play a part. I think a lot of the cricket that is played in UK, there's a lot of cricket played by South Asian players that isn't the top leagues and isn't always in the pathway system. I think there's basic racism, you know, and I mean, I sort of more mean this in a sports racism point of view. There seems to be a real pushing of certain types of players with certain who like to train in a certain way, which comes from the way that English players train and play, which comes from Australian, New Zealand, South African types of coaches. So I think there's, you know, it's a, you see a lot of young Asian kids, getting promoted on how they bowl spin, for instance. And that's, I completely understand that, but can they also bowl? Jasper Bumrah's pretty good, right? You know, Mahela J. Warden is pretty good. And so I do think there's an issue there. I know there's an issue with availability of a lot of Asian players. So on the weekends, for training and playing. So again, when you get to the higher level, you need to be available all the time. And I know that that is not always looked after by the pathway systems, again, all of the counties. So they want someone who's going to turn up to every single training session and do exactly what they're told. And that's not always the case. You know, I would guess that something like Ramadan that's going on at the moment probably hasn't been catered for correctly by English professional system up until very recently, right? You know, it wasn't that long ago the Bangladesh under-19 team turned up in New Zealand and were given ham sandwiches, right? Like, these are real things that you are, as an Asian cricketer in the UK, you are entering a white space. So things, I remember one coach complaining that they always had holidays or you know, religious events or whatever it was and they couldn't come to training. And I said, but are you sure that that's not right? Like, you know, and is there a way at a certain time of year to have training at a different time that doesn't affect that or that it helps them? So I don't think that, yeah, if you are a white Christian group that is setting cricket up for other white Christian people, and then this whole, and look at it, 30%, it's a huge population, try and come in. If you are not then opening it up to understand what the differences new methods that you will need to understand, they're just not going to come in. And I do think that the sort of the system of English cricket is not, it's an exclusionary system rather than an inclusionary system, right? And so there are probably many problems with the Australian system when it comes to this. And, you know, and the drinking culture around Australian cricket was a big issue when I was a kid for a lot of the kids that I grew up with that didn't come from my kind of background. Like, they didn't want to hang around the bar, right? But that's where the club had all of its meetings and all the simple things like that, right? So, but the Australian system, Australian cricket is much more inclusionary. And English cricket is, as I've said before, the grounds are behind big high fences. And the more prestigious the club, quite often, that, you know, the harder it is to get involved with and everything else. Then you've got that whole private school. You know, the private schools basically are the talent pathway for the county system. So to come out of that, you know, to come from a non-private school background is already hard if you are a white Christian heterosexual male, right? And I know this from friends of mine who have that background and have played cricket and will tell you, you know, I've got a friend of mine who played county cricket for, you know, a long period of time. And he told me he played twice at school, right? Whereas the other kids are spending all their time at school playing cricket. Like there's a huge difference there. So if you really want to go through it, there's obviously soccer I've talked about and that many of the cultural differences and what happens with trainings and things like that. You know, we did a podcast on that, Ben, but also Duncan Stone's book kind of tells you, you know, it's not as much about the race side of things, although there's quite a bit of that, but there is certainly a lot on, you know, the pathways and what cricket is. And I do think that cricket in England is too hard to break into if you are not from, to use the words of the immortal Giles Clark, the right kind of family.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Ben King says, nature versus nurture. If Stokes and Jadeja's country of birth were swapped, I think Jadeja would be a left-arm swing bowling all-rounder and Stokes an off-spinning all-rounder. And they are both amazing athletes, so I suspect they would have the athletic ability to bowl whatever suited to the conditions they grew up in. What do you think? No, I don't think that Jadeja, I think he's probably, I don't know what his height is, but I don't see that. I mean, how do you explain Hardik Pandya and that, right? Even someone like Stuart Binney. So I don't really see that as a thing. Like Ben Stokes is what, 6'2", 6'3". He would be what, 15, 20 centimeters taller than Ravi Jadeja. Ravi Jadeja would be what, 170, 172 centimeters. I've only stood next to him once. He's a little bit shorter than me, but not massively, like a couple of inches shorter. They're more likely, as you said, but if you look at Stokes and the kind of athlete he is, I think there's a very real possibility that he still bowls pace. Jadeja might have bowled pace and might have ended up becoming a spinner anyway, just because of the lack of height. There really aren't a lot of, you know, 5'9", 5'10" type of people. But your general point is really true of cricket. You've just kind of picked two players where I'm not sure it's true. If you know, there's all these stories of Paul Harris and Ashley Giles and Michael Beer, of these big strong guys who bowled seam and then become spinners later on. And it's not that we don't get those stories in Asia, but spin is first choice in Asia, right? Like it's a little bit different in some situations. Although Kuldeep Yadav tried to be a fast bowler, didn't he? Rajat Patidar tried to be everything, didn't he? There is a reason why we have, there's a reason why that Paul Harris, Ray Price, Michael Beer, Suleiman Ben, Ashley Giles type spinner exists out of Asia. And in Asia, we get a different kind of spinner like Murali Kartik or Harbhajan Singh. That's nature. There's a reason why Australian bowlers are taller than in other places, because it makes sense to bounce the ball in Australia because the pitches are really flat. And if you can't go to banging the ball into a length, it's not going to work particularly well for you. So there are heaps of, you know, and there aren't many off spinners in Australia. So there's a lot of left-handed batters in Australia. So nature and nurture does play a part. I'm just not sure if you've picked the two perfect people, but in general, that's how it works, right? I do think that's very fair. William says, how are so many England women's away internationals not on radio, including the current New Zealand series and the previous India series? Do the BBC and TalkSport just not want to cover it? I don't know who has the rights to New Zealand at the moment. So I would assume it is more to do with the fact that, so TalkSport covered England's England's test in India, partly because it came with the package. So Big Bash has been covered by in English group before, by the BBC before, because it comes with a package. Sometimes when it comes with a package, you do it. Sometimes you have to. So there's little things like that. I would assume that the cricket boards in those countries are not really trying to sell it all that much. Women's cricket, though, doesn't have a radio relationship like men's cricket does. Women's cricket skipped radio and went straight to TV, whereas men's cricket did not do that. So men's cricket has a natural radio audience for any time you put men's cricket on, even the 100, right? Because there are so many people who follow men's cricket through the radio. Women's cricket has never been on the radio. And the first time any of us, first time it got popular at all, it went straight to TV. I think that plays a part. The BBC and TalkSport have covered women's cricket on the radio of recent times. So it's not that they don't want to. It probably financially doesn't make as much sense from a TalkSport perspective. From a BBC perspective, again, it's probably a budget thing of can they explain away, you know, using the resources of it. Putting together a radio team, that the rights don't usually cost you that much. The production and everything else does. I'm just spitballing here. BBC might want to cover it, but they might want to cover it from the studio to save on costs. And then, quite rightfully, people would say, well, you're going out to cover the men's. Why would you not go out to cover the women's? So there might be issues with that. TalkSport just hasn't got into women's cricket, partly because BBC have actually done a pretty good job with it. So a fantastic job with it so far. And I don't know if a lot of the packages that TalkSport have bought have included women's cricket. And the first one that I'm aware of was the India ones, and they played it straight away. So there's little things. It's a little bit like when TalkSport was playing the India-New Zealand test matches on TalkSport. It's not that they thought that would do better than women's cricket. It's that they had that available to them automatically through another rights package. So it's a really, really confusing thing. But I do think the biggest thing is that there isn't as much of an audience for that at the moment. And you could make the claim that they should be, best way to get an audience is to do it. I don't think that's wrong. I think TalkSport would probably agree with you. I haven't talked to Adam Mountford. I know that he supports women's cricket. But it could just be that it doesn't exist in the same way at the moment. But I think in future it will, as it gets bigger, it will just, you know, it will be done more often. Oh, is that the same question twice? Oh, cool. That's the end of Patreon questions. The IPL game's about to go, so I'll head off and do that in a second, but I can see I've got a few super chats here. Doesn't help if I don't take the other one off. Now I'm double dipping. ABCD says, how would you rank Dhoni, Ranatunga, and Imran Khan as captains, and how do people who have worked with Dhoni talk rate him? I don't talk that much about captaincy, and there's a reason, because I think a lot of it is nonsense. Look, Imran Khan was great at getting people to buy into certain things, and he made himself into a different player to fit his team. I think Ranatunga was a genuine outlier thinker, and I would have loved to have seen what Ranatunga could have done with like the Indian team of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Dhoni, I think, is worth a couple of runs per game for his captaincy. It's probably not as much as people think it is. I mean, even really good players are only worth a couple of runs per game over a standard player. But he's probably worth a couple of runs per game than his captaincy. There aren't that many players who are worth that. People I've talked to him just say that he sees cricket in code, I suppose is the best way of putting it, which allows him to take his emotion out of it and just be like, well, this is happening right now and this is happening right now. So I will do this. And that's not how all people work, right? Certainly not how normal humans work. Shrikant says, Australia dominated England in the 20s and 30s, barring the late 20s. Australia was amateur dominated. England had professionals who played more, 100 days per season. Why did amateur Australia dominate more season England players? I would have to go back and have a look at that, Shrikant. My memory of it was, my guess would be bowlers. Because Australia had fast bowls in the early 1920s when England did not, that could bowl in Australia and England, and that the spinners of Clary Grimmett, Bill O'Reilly, and you know that sort of that whole group that was coming through, which is absolutely fantastic. And I also think the other thing is that probably pitches were getting made better at that time. And because of that, in the old days, England bowlers would have just come in and just held the seam up and the wicket would have done all the work for them. That was happening less and less. Whereas in Australian wickets, that had already gone. Wickets in Australia were already becoming quite flat. So the Australian bowlers were probably more able to get wickets in multiple surfaces. And you also have to throw Bradman into that, I think. You know, as good as Hammond was, he's not Bradman, right? So that's just all off the top of my head. 1920s is not, I know a fair bit about the 1930s, and Bradman plays a huge part in that, as does Bill O'Reilly and Clary Grimmett. 1920s is not one of my strongest points. There wasn't actually all that much cricket played in the 1920s. There were some interesting things kind of happening, but you know, this, you know, I would say 1890 to 1900 and 1900 to 1910 are more interesting to me than the 19, and then the 1930s become really interesting because it becomes more of an international sport. But off the top of my head, I think that would be what it was. Also, when you say Australia had amateurs, you've got to remember that you're right, but Australian cricket, club cricket, was played over 2 days on the weekends and no one played it like they were amateurs. And when they played their first-class games, they played them like test matches as well. So I do think there was a couple of natural advantages there compared to the treadmill of English cricket. Is there a case for WG to be the greatest of all time ahead of Bradman and Sobers? He taught the world how to play overarm bowling. Do you think overarm bowling would have been outlawed but for WG in the 1860s, 70s? No, the movement towards overarm bowling was already coming through. Is there a case for him being the greatest of all time ahead of Bradman and Sobers? Yes, I think you could make a case. Probably not greatest test player, though. They're both much better test players than him, partly because even though he completely dominates the 1880s when he does play test cricket, despite the fact that he was in his 30s and had just gone back to being a full-time doctor, or started being a full-time doctor, he goes on to play in the 1890s, and he's, I don't know, seventh or eighth best average in the 1890s, and he's not obviously taking wickets at test level. But if you look at his absolute peak years, I would say he compares with Bradman, you know, in that 15-year peak year. I've said this before, but it's my favourite fact in cricket, that there was a year when W.G. Grace made more hundreds than all of first-class cricket combined. That just is ridiculous. And so, if, you know, that is a Bradman-like thing. And if you look at the sort of numbers that he had in first-class cricket in that period, I think he does compare to Bradman in that period. But it is with an average of like, you know, well, actually he did have a couple of high average years. But yeah, he gets a slight boost as well for teaching batters how to bat. I think that's fair. But I'm not sure he's better than Bradman, all things considered. But I think you can make that argument. And obviously Sobers is in that conversation as well. I think that's also fair. Sega says, your current favorite cricketer and IPL team. I kind of always, RCB and Kolkata are probably the two teams that I care about the most. I mean, I work for RCB, so that kind of ruined it a little bit. I've always liked Kolkata. I'm not sure I have like a team, but those are probably the ones I'm slightly more interested in. My current favorite cricket? That's a really good question. I mean, I suppose you've got guys like Dhananjaya De Silva on that list. I'm not sure he's right at the top though. Yeah, I don't know. It's just not quite the way that cricket works in my brain anymore. I'm sure if I went through it, like McCullum was probably the last guy that would have just been a really, really interesting, easy question. But for guys like Dhananjaya De Silva or Benny Howell or, you know, those sorts of guys, like the answer is probably that I really enjoy them and I'm fascinated by them, but I'm not sure they're like my favorite cricketer, if that makes sense. I don't know if I have an obvious answer to that at the moment. I'm sure. Yeah. I really don't think I do. But I'm, you know, maybe someone will pop back up and I'm probably forgetting one that I had up until recently who maybe has retired or has moved on or, you know, moved on makes them sound like they might have died. Anyway, Huge thanks to everyone for the super chats, especially to Srikanth. He went above it and beyond with proper nerdish questions as well, which is what Wagon Wheel is here for. The game has started. My phone's lighting up with people sending me messages. A big thanks to everyone for supporting me and everything else through JaredKimber. I'll get it right one day. Patreon.com/JaredKimber. Remember, over at goodareas.co, we have a whole bunch more of our work. And on the main channel, we have stuff as well. We've got some really good podcasts coming out in the next little while, including interview with David Visa. And there's a bunch of really fascinating IPL coverage, which isn't just about the games. And there's some other stuff going on there as well, but plenty of stuff at the games. And a huge shout out to Cricket 8, who we do the live watch-alongs with. And we also do a bunch of writing and podcasts with them as well. So head over to cricket8.com. But that's it for me, and I will see you again very soon here on The Wagon Wheel. Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Baron Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.